Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 106 event, which takes place in Fortaleza, Brazil. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we profited 0.5 units overall after going 1-1 on our premium plays. We also won our 1-unit free bet on David Tamer at +325 betting odds. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 106 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a middleweight contest between Gareth McClellan, who is 13-5, and Paulo Henrique Costa, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Costa, -210, the comeback on McClellan at +160. Right now at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, it is Costa -265. McClellan is at +225. So a little bit more action coming in Costa's way. People are throwing him in parlays. McClellan, unfortunately, just doesn't get the love and respect out there from the betting community. I mean, honestly, I understand it. He hasn't been performing at a high caliber rate in the UFC thus far, even though he's had okay performances at times. I mean, his fight against DeCherico in his last fight, a lot of people hold DeCherico and I guess as far as like potential, at least before that fight, in high regards. I mean, I think a lot of people thought he was well-rounded. He could be climbing up the ranks soon. He'll get better and better by every fight, but this is definitely a setback for DeCherico because he did have a competitive decision with McClellan. So that kind of dropped his stock a little bit. So that's how much lack of respect McClellan tends to get. Now, as far as skill set overall, I think it's okay. I mean, he's just solid everywhere. I think he's got okay underrated power a little bit on the feet. He's got some decent wrestling, got some decent grappling. Now, of course, in all of those areas that I just mentioned, I mean, a lot of times he's actually the worst of the two fighters in most cases. Like a lot of people will outstrike him. A lot of people will out wrestle him. A lot of people will out grapple him on the ground as well. So he's just okay. He's solid. But he's not really great at any particular area that he's not going to dominate his competition. Whereas Costa, man, I mean, this guy really has a ton of potential. He's only 25 years old. He's a former Tough Brazil 3 vet. He ended up going 1-1 on the show, but he did have a pretty good showing. I mean, he lost a split decision to Alexander Jr., which obviously made the finals and has had an okay run in the UFC at times, has looked decent in his own right. So it wasn't a bad loss for Costa in that in the Ultimate Fighter. The only problem is he actually lost that fight because his cardio and his gas tank just kind of gave out. But the way Costa goes about fighting is, I mean, he's just a high pressure, aggressive type of fighter where he can get the fight to the floor. He can do some damage on the ground. He looks for submissions awfully quick as well. He can also throw some big bombs on the feet. So he's just an aggressive, talented fighter that's actually not too bad. He's got some technical skill set on the feet. He's a little wild at times, but he does have some power behind it. And then again, underground, I mean, he's actually has decent wrestling from what I've seen thus far, and he's capable of doing some good things underground jiu-jitsu wise as well. So the guy's a tough out. The problem is if you can kind of weather his storm and take him into deeper waters, he does tend to slow down a little bit, and that aspect of the game, you could start taking control and kind of pushing the pace back at him, and then he kind of starts wilting under pressure a little bit. He doesn't fight the same. So it all depends on his cardio. Now, he's had enough time, you know, from the UFC, got a little bit more experience outside of the show as well. So I think he's going to be in a better spot here entering the UFC officially. I think he's going to be better than most of us anticipate. And if that's the case, he should win this fight. I mean, he is the better fighter for sure. He's got more upside to him, and I think he probably does come away with a win. The only concern here would be his cardio. And if McClellan can't survive early on, it might get interesting if it does hit the scorecards or if it gets late. So I'm going to pick Costa to win this fight, though. I think he should get the win.
Yeah, this is a really straightforward matchup. McClellan is not a very good UFC middleweight. He, being a former athlete in South Africa, you would think that he would have, you know, the quick reflexes. He'd be, you know, explosive, but he's very sluggish and slow in the cage. He doesn't really represent a lot of threats on the feet, even though he's so physically strong. And really the only way he wins this fight is with repeated takedowns and just trying to drag it out a little bit. Costa is just an animal. I mean, the guy is a ferocious striker. Every single one of his professional fights has ended in the first round, by stoppage. So, and he's just been tearing through people, and he's getting better. I mean, he was a lot more raw overall when he was competing on the Ultimate Fighter Brazil season 3, but, his striking has become a little bit more refined. He looked really sharp his last couple fights. So he's definitely, taking his game to the next level. He's a guy that, could be a threat in the middleweight division if he can continue this level of development, especially if he can add a little bit more to his, ground, at least defense. So I think that, Costa doesn't just win this fight, but I think he wins extremely impressively. And, I expect him to take out McClellan in the first round. Now, dropping down to the featherweight division for the final bout on the Fight Pass prelims, we have Honey Jason, who is 15-6 with one no contest, taking on Jeremy Kennedy, who is 9-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Kennedy minus 155, the comeback on Jason at plus 115. Right now, the line is basically a pick 'em. Where actually it is a pick'em right now, five dimes. Across the market, I'm looking at the Don Best screen right now in the sportsbook market, starting to get some pick'ems, but slight lean towards Jason. I see some 115s out there for Jason. So he's a slight favorite in some spots, and it looks like that could be a trend that could continue. So we might see Kennedy as an underdog here shortly, but it'll stay, I'm sure, close to that pick'em spot right now. And again, at five dimes, it is exactly a pick'em. This is a tough fight because obviously Kennedy's kind of the unknown guy that's coming in off of an impressive UFC debut that he took on short notice up a weight class against a solid fighter in Ricci. Now, of course, Ricci coming off of a loss recently, I think in most people's minds, that's going to be like, all right, how good was that win for Kennedy after the fact? But honestly, it was a pretty solid win, especially in considering the circumstances and taking the fight on short notice or whatnot. But Kennedy is a very highly touted prospect, only 24 years old. He's very well-rounded. I mean, when I say well-rounded, I'm talking about every aspect of the game. The guy has clean stand-up. He's got power to go along with it, so he can finish you on the feet. The guy has good wrestling on the ground. He's able to finish you on the ground as well. He's got a submission game to go along with it. He's a pretty smart fighter. He looks to be durable. He's got a good gas tank. So he's a very complete fighter that's only going to improve fight by fight and win by win in the UFC. So the UFC is throwing a very talented fighter at him right here, and it's a big test. It's definitely going to be the toughest test of his career, but it's a test I do think he kind of can pass. Now, Jason – again, we were just talking about, I mean, what kind of test he'll be because of his skill set. The guy has the experience. He's faced a lot of talented people throughout his career. He's had some success, as we all know, in the UFC. He's a finisher, especially on the ground. I mean, he's ultra dangerous. If you put him on his back, he can definitely submit you quick. So you have to be really careful with Jason on the ground, especially on the feet. He has some power. He's got some aggression. He can finish you there as well. So he's just one of those guys that is dangerous to step in there with, and he's got the experience. I mean, he's been in the cage and in the ring in his whole career with, I mean, all sorts of different, you know, types of fighters. So he's seen everything. There's nothing that new that you could throw at this guy. So it's going to be tough to beat Jason. But I do, again, think that Kennedy has enough in his skill set to do that. I think he could control the pace of the fight. I think on the feet, he's going to be doing a little bit more damage and probably winning more of the striking exchanges on the feet. And then on the ground, I think if it does hit the ground, I think Kennedy is going to be the one more times than not in top position. And I think he can probably withstand the submission game of Jason and not get caught. So I think if it hits the scorecards, Kennedy probably ends up winning competitive decision. And if there's a finish, I think we could see it. I mean, it would be an upset, obviously. Well, I mean, it depends on what the odds actually close. But in my mind, at least, it would be kind of an upset if Jason pulls off the sub. But I could see Kennedy possibly finishing Jason along the way as well. So a close fight in many regards, but I do lean a little bit more towards Kennedy, and I don't agree with the early action coming in.
I can understand people thinking that Honey Jason could pull this off, especially because he's more experienced than Kennedy and he's fighting in Brazil. But, you know, Jason hasn't exactly been a world beater when he's competed in Brazil. You go back and he got smoked by Jeremy Stevens in Brazil. He got beat by Robbie Peralta in Brazil. So, you know, his Brazilian record isn't even that great. At least since he's been in the UFC. Now, He's coming off of a fight where he was pretty much dominated by Dennis Bermudez, and that was this past August. So, you know, he's going to come in here motivated to perform, but I think Jeremy Kennedy is a really impressive up-and-coming prospect. I mean, this guy debuted in the UFC in the lightweight division, picked up a win over a tough guy in Alex Ricci, and then now he's dropping down to his natural weight class. He is very well-rounded. He's good enough on the feet, I think, to outpace Jason. And on the ground, I expect his wrestling's better than Jason's, although maybe submission-wise, Jason probably has the edge. The main thing here is, will Jason be able to tap out Kennedy from his back? Because I expect that if it goes to the ground, Kennedy will be in top position, and Jason can throw up some triangle chokes, some arm bars. I mean, he's definitely a talented grappler, and we've seen him pull off like a triangle choke against like Mike Wilkinson. So he could definitely be able to do this. That being said, though, I think that Kennedy is crafty enough and well-rounded enough that he doesn't get caught. And I expect Kennedy to walk away with likely a decision victory. So my pick is going to be Jeremy Kennedy. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a lightweight contest between Michelle Prezeris, who is 21-2, and Josh Berkman, who is 29-14 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I have Prezeris -215, the comeback on Berkman at +165. Right now, over five dimes, it is Prezeris -245, Berkman +205. So a little bit more action coming in Prezeris' way. This one, I mean, I'm not surprised by the early action. I figured that more of the betting public early on would probably side with Prezeris, and that obviously very well could be the right side. I mean, Prezeris has looked great in his UFC performances. I mean, as a whole, I've underrated this guy and underestimated it, honestly, from the beginning. Now, we all seen him make his debut against Paulo Thiago, obviously on short notice, up a weight class, and he did relatively well in that fight. I mean, he lost by decision, but especially early on in that fight. So it was impressive. Then he drops down, and he does start performing really well. I mean, the win that stands out, I think, in most people's minds, especially early on in his UFC career for Prezeris, was Taisimov. I mean, a very talented fighter, and what he was able to do in that fight was pretty impressive. But since that time, I mean, he did suffer a loss to Kevin Lee, but he's been on a roll, and he's faced decent competition in doing so, especially his win over Gilbert Burns in his last fight. A lot of people thought that's a terrible stylistic matchup, myself included, because Prezeris can't get him to the ground. And on the feet, we all thought that Burns would give him a little bit more difficulties, but Prezeris proved everybody wrong, or most wrong at least, by outstriking Burns pretty significantly. I mean, Prezeris is a little tank. On the feet, he does have power. His striking is getting better. It's to the point where you definitely have to pay attention. And I mean, he can outstrike a lot of these guys on the feet these days too. So Prezeris is the type of fighter right now that I think is in his prime. He's able to get the fight to the ground when he wants to in most cases. I think he's taken every single opponent that he's faced in the UFC down, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, that's how good his wrestling is on the ground. Of course, he's got submission game to go along with it. And now adding the stand-up game with a little bit of power to go along with that, I mean, he's a tough, tough out. So deserving favorite, especially over an aging veteran like Berkman. Berkman is still a dangerous opponent, though. That's why this fight's kind of a head scratcher, in my opinion, because I mean, Berkman kind of trending the other direction, Prezeris is kind of trending upwards. So Brian and I actually were just briefly talking about it, and we were like, man, it is kind of a weird fight why they would match these guys up with Berkman on a little losing skid as well. But it kind of makes sense because Berkman, I mean, he is a tough out still. He's got some advantages, obviously, in this fight as well. One of them being length. He's got some power. He's got that experience level to go along with it. He's got the wrestling background where it's not going to be easy for Prezeris to get Berkman on the ground. So this is going to be probably a competitive war type of matchup for these guys, you know, back and forth a little bit. Berkman definitely has enough power in his hands to make life interesting, especially with that reach advantage he has on the feet. And then also Prezeris does love to dive in with those double leg takedowns that he's pretty good at getting, but he needs to be cautious leaving that neck in there. Jiu-jitsu black belt or not, I mean, Berkman, it doesn't matter. If he gets that arm around your neck and he tightens that grip with that guillotine choke, you're not going to get out of it. I mean, he has a sick guillotine choke. So Berkman has ways to win his fight. I think it'll be competitive on the cards if it goes. I think Berkman has an outside shot of possibly catching Prezeris on the feet, knocking him out, or he's got that guillotine choke to fall back on as well. So not an easy fight, I think, for Prezeris here. But ultimately, with all the things I just said, I still have to lean Prezeris' way because I think if he fights smart, he should be able to outpoint Berkman and at least win on the scorecards. I think he'll be pushing the action a little bit more so. And again, maybe mixing in a takedown or two along the way could probably seal the deal for him as well. So Prezeris, a lot of good things to like about him. I do think he gets a win, but this is kind of a head-scratcher of a fight.
To me, Josh Berkman really only has a puncher's chance in this one. And even that might be tough, because Prezeris has shown a pretty good chin over his UFC career, and the only times that he's really lost fights were in his UFC debut when he fought at welterweight, and then when he just kind of ran out of steam in one of his battles, but against Kevin Lee. But this time around, I mean, Josh Berkman, I mean, he's a decent striker. He's got a decent submission game, but Prezeris is by far the better wrestler. Prezeris is very aggressive on the feet as well, so he should be able to hold his own against Berkman. And honestly, I just expect Prezeris to get the takedowns and get top position against Berkman. That's happened quite a bit throughout Berkman's career so far, that people have just been able to control him. And Michel Prezeris is on quite a run right now. I mean, he's looked really, really good. And he's coming off of a great performance against Gilbert Burns that he pulled off an upset victory. And overall, he's just rock solid. And I think what's going to happen here is Prezeris is going to get takedowns. He's going to stay in top position. He's going to beat up Berkman. It's going to be tough to finish him because Berkman is very physically tough. But overall, I just expect that Prezeris should win a decision. So he's going to be my pick. Now, moving on and dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Rani Yahya, who is 23-8 with one no contest, taking on Joe Soto, who's 17-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Yahya, minus 175, the comeback on Soto at plus 135. Looking over to Dimes right now, it's minus 160, plus 140, so line margins have tightened up. A little bit of action coming in both guys right now, but nothing significant to go crazy about or talk about because, I mean, it is kind of a tough fight. And I think the line is honestly appropriately set where it's at right now because I think you got to give the slight edge to Yahya in this fight. Soto's been performing okay. I mean, overall in his UFC career, it's been up and down. I think the best performance that he's had so far was actually against TJ Dillashaw on short notice. I mean, a lot of people weren't expecting him to do as well as he did, but that just shows you what kind – I mean, when he really steps it up, I mean, he could perform at a high level in the UFC. He's got all the tools in the world, I mean, that you want to have in a fighter. He's got good hands. He's got the boxing. Obviously, he's got wrestling to go along with it. He's got a jiu-jitsu game. So, again, another well-rounded fighter that's above average in all areas. So, Soto is a very difficult out. Just stylistically, how he matches up with Yahya here, it's kind of tough because Yahya is the better grappler of the two. Yahya does tend to get his way in most cases. If he wants to get the fight to the ground, he manages to do so. Usually ends up in top position working for his, obviously his chokes and his sub game along the way. So Yahya is just one of those grinders that's going to come at you and try to smother you on the ground and submit you and finish you off that way as well. His stand-up is getting a little bit better too. His boxing's getting a little bit better. He's getting more comfortable and a little bit more confident. So Yahya is not an easy out at all. This is going to be a very close fight, and it's a tough one for me. I've kind of been going back and forth because I could see Soto outpointing Yahya on the feet, and his wrestling might be good enough to stifle Yahya for a little while. But I could also see actually Soto get in top position in this fight if it does go to the ground if they do get involved in some scrambles or whatnot along the way. So it is going to be a very competitive fight. And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Soto does edge this fight out on the cards. But until I see it happening, I mean, recently Yahya has been facing some decent competition. I mean, a lot of similarities to the style that Soto is going to throw at him. And he's been coming out ahead. So I guess I'm going to have to side with Yahya until we see him kind of have a bad performance or two along the way. If in a matchup like this, it's hard to kind of pick against him is what I'm trying to say. So Yahya is going to be the pick here.
This fight should be reasonably close. I mean, Joe Soto was a former Bellator champion, and he seems like he's found himself a little bit in his last couple fights. He kind of had a rough start to his UFC career, but now he's on a nice little two-fight win streak. But the problem is he picked up those last two fights on the ground, and Rani Yahya might be the best grappler overall in the bantamweight division. So Yahya coming in here, he should just have a huge edge unless Soto is able to completely stifle all attempts to go to the ground and keep this fight standing. Then I just don't see how Soto can really win. I mean, Soto is a talented grappler, but he's not like at the level of Rani Yahya. Rani Yahya has been able to just outwork and outpace people on the canvas repeatedly over his last UFC fights, and he's looked great. So what I think happens here is this fight goes to the floor, and then Rani Yahya just controls Joe Soto. He wins the grappling exchanges, and then maybe submit Soto, but I just expect him to be in top position or in an advantageous position, maybe on Soto's back or something. And I just don't see how Soto can really win this fight unless he is so much better on the feet than Yaya. And I don't really think he is. So, this is Joe Soto's or Ronnie Yaya's fight to lose. And I expect that he either wins by decision or submission here. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Sergio Moraes, who is 11-3-1, taking on Davy Ramos, who is making his UFC debut with a 6-1 mark. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Moraes -275, the comeback on Ramos at +195. And right now over five dimes, it is Don Best has not added that fight to the screen yet, so excuse me one second. It is -205 for Moraes and the comeback on Ramos at +165. So a little bit more action coming in on the dog Ramos early on, it looks like. And I mean, I could understand it as well. I mean, you have grappler versus grappler in this matchup here, and they're two high caliber grapplers too. Now, Ramos obviously is taking this fight on short notice, so that has to come into play. And he's fighting up a division as well. Normally he fights at 155 pounds. So those two factors do factor into this overall fight. And they could be a big factor here, to be honest with you, because I mean, you do have that grappling versus grappling kind of style. So I think both these guys can kind of neutralize each other a little bit underground. And then it's going to come out to being pretty much a grappler versus grappler striking war, I think, on the feet. Both these guys can take the fight to the ground and have underrated wrestling as well. But again, I think they kind of neutralize each other out a little bit, and it ends up standing a little bit. And of course, the reach is about the same, but Moraes is a little bit taller. I think Moraes has that experience. I mean, he's been a little bit more battle tested throughout his career, so he should have a little bit of an edge. But Ramos is the type of fighter that has a very stocky, heavy punching kind of game. I mean, his stature, he's just a short, stocky guy, and so he's got that kind of powerhouse built. So when he throws those bombs that he throws at you and it connects, he could definitely do some damage. Now, he's not the best striker out there. I'm not saying that he's a real dominant striker, because again, his grappling and his wrestling are actually the best attributes of his game, but he's okay standing on the feet. And I think Moraes, we've seen in the past that he has been clipped and he has been dropped and he's been knocked out as well. Ramos could catch him on the feet and possibly put him out. So I wouldn't be shocked if I see that. But overall, I think what's going to happen here is, even if Ramos starts off well in this fight, I think Moraes is just going to be the one that does tend to take over as the fight progresses a little bit in round two and round three, and probably ends up decisioning Ramos. Maybe a late stoppage if Ramos does gas along the way, but I think more than likely it's going to be Moraes kind of just grinding out a competitive but clear enough decision type of win over Ramos. So I just don't think that Ramos is up to the task. I think Moraes probably ends up getting top position on the ground along the way as it goes too, if Ramos does start to gas. And I think that's how he's probably going to win the fight, just basically outpoints him. So hard to go against Moraes in this spot, although I could see Ramos just dropping a bomb on him and putting him out. I mean, that's the wild card factor you got to think of here for sure. But Moraes is going to be my pick.
Davy Ramos is a really talented grappler overall. And the guy's won the ADCC grappling competition, and Sergio Moraes is a world champion grappler as well. So, I mean, I'm really expecting some top-notch ground exchanges in this fight. I mean, I think it'd be just a complete waste if they ended up standing and banging like two wrestlers that counter each other. But I expect Sergio Moraes and David Ramos to have some really, really exciting ground exchanges. But that being said, Moraes is, he's a bigger fighter. I mean, Ramos normally fights at lightweight, but he's taking this fight on 1 week notice. So, he's moving up a weight class basically just to get an opportunity in the UFC. And then, Ramos, you know, short notice, he's smaller, and he's coming all the way to Brazil for his UFC debut. I mean, there's so much going against him here. And overall, while he's performed, he also has been tested by decent fighters in the past, and he failed that test. I mean, if you look at his performance against David Rickles in Bellator, I mean, he lost a decision there, and Sergio Moraes is a much better grappler than David Rickles, and he's a much bigger, so he might be able to just bully Ramos around. That being said, Ramos is probably the better striker of the two. And if this fight does somehow stay standing for all three rounds, there is a slight possibility that he could pick up the upset. But that being said, I definitely feel like this is Sergio Moraes' fight to lose, especially with all the mitigating factors going against Ramos. So I expect Moraes to either win a decision or maybe he just out-muscles Ramos and gets a stoppage. But overall, I got to pick Sergio Moraes here. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a lightweight contest between Francisco Trinaldo, who is 21-4, and Kevin Lee, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Trinaldo minus 130 to come back on Lee at minus 110. Right now, over five times, it is Lee minus 155, Trinaldo at plus 135. So, needless to say, people are backing Lee in this fight right now. Again, they're laying it from minus 110 to minus 155, so it's not too bad. And I do lean towards Lee myself, honestly, and five dimes, and the sports books know that as well. And I do understand why people are coming in that way. I mean, it's his grappling. If you look back at Trinaldo's past losses, even though he's been on a heck of a win streak, riding seven fights in a row, and Brian and I, again, touched on this a little bit before the podcast started. I mean, Trinaldo's kryptonite has been very good grapplers, and Lee is going to look just to do just that, look to get the fight to the floor, look to dominate Trinaldo, take his back, you know, sink in the hooks and choke him out. If not, get dominant position and start pounding away. I mean, look at the fight with Matthews. Lee is very capable of doing that as well. So stylistically, this is an interesting fight because I think Trinaldo has been on a heck of a streak against solid competition. But again, most of those guys have been more striking based fighters. So Lee is going to push the envelope here for sure. He's going to look to try to exploit Trinaldo's weakness on the ground, and he might have success doing so. The wild card here, though, is, I mean, Lee does have a suspect chin, and Lee does have some suspect cardio at times. And his fight is in Brazil, where I think Trinaldo is going to dig deep. And if he can weather that early storm, life in round two and round three for Lee is going to get very interesting because, I mean, Trinaldo is a heck of a finisher. And again, I think that he has that motivation, obviously, to ride this seven fight win streak. I mean, at his age, he's not a young gun at all. Trinaldo, I believe, is 38 years old. He just has that kind of desire and that kind of heart that he wants to be relevant in the UFC and wants to climb that ladder and wants to make a great living for his family. And he's been doing okay. I mean, that's, I think, what's driving him more than anything else. So he's a very dangerous opponent, even at age 38. And I think he's in, honestly, the prime of his career right now. He's looked great in that little win streak that he's on against solid competition, despite the stylistic differences here in this fight. So Trinaldo is not going to be an easy out. I do, again, understand why people are coming in Lee's way. He does have an advantage on the ground, and he probably does exploit that. So as far as a pick goes, I agree with it. I'm going to pick Lee to win this fight, but it seems like everybody's kind of thinking the same way. And, man, I'm not going to be as confident, especially at minus 155, as everybody out there that's kind of coming in like crazy on him, because I do think that Trinaldo does have a few ways to win this fight, and he might be able to pull it off as the fight goes. But obviously, I can't get away from what I originally thought, and I think that Lee does get this fight to the ground and beat him, so I'm going to have to pick him to win.
Honestly, this fight all boils down to takedowns and chin strength. Kevin Lee is a phenom. I mean, he's nicknamed the Motown Phenom, and he is extremely aggressive, extremely capable. He goes out there, and he doesn't just win. He's been dominating people, and it seems like he is learning to fight around his flaws. I mean, his biggest flaw, obviously, is the chin strength. Maybe he didn't understand at first that maybe his chin wasn't so great, and then he faced Leonardo Santos, got clipped, got knocked out, and ever since then, he has looked better than ever. He goes out there, and he just utilizes that extremely aggressive wrestling, and he has been on fire. I've been so impressed with what Kevin Lee's been capable of doing out there, mainly because a lot of fighters, they just kind of stick to what they know. And Kevin Lee, he basically has gone away from the stand-up, and he just takes people down and dominates them. It's really been very exciting to watch. So what I expect to happen in this fight, Francisco Trinaldo is a very talented striker. He has really taken it to another level with this monstrous win streak he's been on. But there's one thing you have to think about with this win streak, and that is he really hasn't faced anybody that's challenged him on the ground during the win streak. For the most part, it's been all stand-up fights. Leandro Silva, Norman Park, Chad Laprise, Ross Pearson, Yancy Medeiros, Paul Felder, all those guys wanted to stand with him. I mean, this was a guy that started his UFC career out with three losses in his first seven fights. And how did all those losses occur? Gleison Tibau took him down for three rounds. Piotr Hallman survived almost getting knocked out and then got him on the ground and finished him with a Kimura, I believe. And then Michael Chiesa weathered the early storm and then took him down repeatedly to win a decision. So every time he's faced a really good grappler or somebody that really knows what they're doing on the ground, he's had a lot of trouble. So I just think this is a bad stylistic matchup for Trinaldo. Now, if this was the Kevin Lee, maybe pre-Leandro Santos, then Trinaldo would have a really great shot because Lee, I think, because he's such a good athlete, he was developing his striking and he wanted to become a very well-rounded fighter and beat everybody everywhere. And he probably had a really good chance of getting knocked out if he'd faced Trinaldo at that point in his career. But now I expect, unless Trinaldo catches him coming in, which could still happen, but unless that happens, I just think Kevin Lee will completely control this fight and get top position and look for the finish. I mean, this guy is ferocious once he gets in control. I mean, he does not just ride it out. So if Lee gets top position, he is going to pursue the finish extremely hard. So I really like Kevin Lee to not just win, but potentially win impressively. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 main card, we have a welterweight contest between Alex Oliveira, who is 15-3-1 with two no contests, and Tim Means, who is 26-7-1 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Means -165 to come back on Oliveira at +125. Here's a spot that got bet up a little bit. Right now it's Means -260. 260 to come back on Oliveira is +220. So after their last fight, I mean, obviously this is the rematch with the controversy that ended with the knees or whatnot. And it was a crazy fight, honestly. And a lot of people believe that obviously Means clearly was on his way to winning that fight. So that being said, he's going to win this fight easy. Everybody's banking on Means and whatnot. It's I can understand it again. I do get it. I mean, it looked like pre-fight number one, it looked like Oliveira had a path to victory, which would be, again, Means' kryptonite in the past has been getting taken down and controlled a little bit by more dominant grapplers, wrestlers. And Oliveira definitely had that in his back pocket that a lot of people believed, including myself, that he'd probably be able to mix in some takedowns and get the fight to the ground and kind of control Means along the way. And then not to mention Oliveira on the feet's not bad. It's not like he's going to not have any chance on the feet at all. Obviously, he's a very dangerous striker in his own right as well, but Means has the clear edge there. But after fight one took place, I mean, Means, even though Oliveira did take his back and had his moments in that fight, it was clear that Means was able to control the wrestling, able to control just the whole fight in general overall, and he was doing some damage there, and it looked like Oliveira was possibly on his way out. So that's why everybody's so confidently betting Means in this spot. This is going to be a different fight. I mean, we could see Means go out there and just blow him out of the water. I mean, mentally, if Oliveira is now lacking confidence because of that first performance, I think it might just happen like that. I mean, Means is a tremendous fighter, and he has improved, and he even has a chip on his shoulder. He's telling people, you guys think I can't wrestle, I'm going to show you that I can. So Means with improved wrestling is a very dangerous guy. I mean, he is one of, I think, the toughest outs at lightweight or welterweight, just because he's got that relentless pace that he sets, and he does have a little bit of everything in his pocket, meaning he does have a little bit of wrestling. He does have a little bit of grappling to go along with, and he has that killer instinct on the feet. I mean, he's just a nasty striker. He's just basically ruthless on the feet. So he's a tough out, and I get it. I mean, I respect him a lot, but I still think that Oliveira is going to be able to adjust a little bit. Oliveira, I think, is going to be able to obviously game plan a little bit better because now he knows the Means his wrestling is up to par. And I think those adjustments are probably going to come into play here. He does not want to go out there and get embarrassed, especially in Brazil. And that could very well possibly happen. So I'm expecting both fighters to make some adjustments, but I think Oliveira is going to be a little bit more prepared in dealing with Means this time. And I don't think it's going to be as easy as everybody thinks. Now, it's hard to pick against Means, especially based on what we saw, but I'm not as confident as everybody else out there picking, you know, betting -260s or whatnot. This fight got up to -350 at one point. So now it's starting to come back down to reality a little bit, but I still think it's a little bit too high because Oliveira does have a path to victory. He could get the fight to the ground still, even though the first fight went the way it did, and he could take his back and possibly submit him or on the feet. You never know. I mean, it's obviously two guys that are capable of putting people out, even though Means has the edge on the feet. You just can't count Oliveira out there either. So my pick is going to be Means. I do think he is the better of the two, but at -250, 260 out there, No way. I'm not as confident as everybody else out there. Oliveira is not a can, and Oliveira is going to be a dangerous guy to fight. So I'm picking Means, but Oliveira has a better shot than most people think.
I know that Nick wanted to say that people are using the first fight as an excuse for why Means is such a big favorite this time around, but it makes sense. I mean, Oliveira, he is a smart fighter. He uses a good fight IQ, but man, he was getting absolutely smoked in that fight. And I know it's crazy to, you know, two fights can be completely different, but not usually when they are immediate rematches done very quickly back to back. Maybe if there's like a year, a couple years in between rematches, they're completely different. But I think what's going to happen here is, Alex Oliveira is going to try to work that grappling game again. And if he cannot put Tim Means on the ground, he is just not a good enough striker to hang with Tim Means, especially on the inside where Means just thrives. Means is so ferocious when people get up close and personal with him. And if Oliveira is leaning over, hunched over, trying to take him down and get some clinch takedowns and stuff, Tim Means is just going to elbow the absolute hell out of him. His elbows, his knees, his fists. I mean, this guy is so dangerous from so many different positions. And Alex Oliveira was seriously so close to being put out already in the last fight before the illegal strike, the incidental, I guess, if you want to call it that. But man, Tim Means was just in so much dominating control that I just don't see how he could lose unless he gets crazy overconfident and he doesn't train as hard. But I just don't think Tim Means would do that. So I think this is going to be a repeat of the last fight, except Means actually finishes it this time legally. So I think this one, sweet and simple. I like Tim Means, and I think that he looks really good. Now, dropping down to the women's bantamweight division, we have Betch Koheya, who is 10-2, taking on Marion Renault, who is 7-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Renault minus 135, comeback on Koheya at minus 105. Right now, it's basically staying steady. Minus 130 Renault, plus 110 Koheya. Line margins have tightened up a little bit, and it seems to be market price out there, about 120s, 130s out there for Renault. This is a competitive fight. It's a tough fight. I mean, I know a lot of fans out there don't really get behind Koheya that well. I mean, it seems like she's kind of a heel in most people's minds. I mean, just, I don't know, there's a lack of respect out there, and I kind of get it. I mean, Koheya is kind of one of those people that's a little out there as far as the way she promotes herself or just in general out there. But the truth is, look at her as a fighter, and she's not an easy out. I mean, her performance against Jessica was a bit controversial, but you got to give her credit. I mean, she went into hostile territory, and then she ended up actually in round two adjusting her style a little bit, getting a little bit more aggressive, and she made it a fight from that point on. So Koheya, I mean, been in the cage with some decent competition, and she's been winning against decent competition. That's kind of my point. I mean, she earned that title shot against Ronda Rousey. Obviously, I don't agree with that. I don't think she was ready for a title shot at that time, but I mean, she's even been to the top of the mountain, even though she got destroyed by Rousey at that spot. So she's got some good experience under her belt. She's capable of beating, I mean, a lot of fighters out there are not pointing them because she does have that steady pace that she keeps on you. She, you know, constant pressure. Her striking's not that bad. She's got a little bit of power. It's just not anything that's going to overwhelm you or nothing that people are going to be talking about the next day or whatnot in most cases with Koheya. Renault, on the other hand, she is a little bit more flashy. She does have a little bit more pop in her punches. She is a little bit more of a finisher. I mean, she's able to actually land enough and do some damage on the feet and possibly knock fighters out. She's also able to obviously submit and win fights even off her back with slick arm bars and submissions. So Renault is a more capable finisher, and she is a little bit more of an exciting fighter overall. So I think she is going to have some advantages over Koheya in this fight too. It's just going to be hard to stop Koheya. So I'm expecting a very competitive type of decision if it does hit the scorecards. If it ends inside, I do think it's Renault that actually finishes the fight as well. So Renault does have more ways to win this fight, and I'm going to slightly lean towards her. But this fight being in Brazil and Koheya pushing a high pace and it being a very competitive fight, which I'm expecting if it does hit the cards, you never know. I mean, I could definitely see it going either way. I'm just going to slightly lean towards Renault because I do think she is the more talented of the two fighters, but she's going to be in hostile territory, and it should be a tough fight.
This is a tricky matchup. I mean, Marion Renault has stepped in there against some excellent competition, just like Betch Koheya, and she's performed pretty well. That being said, Renault, her age is getting up there, and she's been starting to fight like her age a little bit. I mean, when she debuted in the UFC, I mean, she looked like an absolute world beater. with just that dominant showcase against Alexis Dufresne. And then she goes out and finishes Jessica Andrade. I mean, I thought that she could be a potential contender. But ever since then, she has not looked exactly great. I mean, against Holly Holm, obviously that's going to be tough because Holm is such a better striker than her, and she just lost a striking battle. But the Ashley Evans-Smith fight, it was close. It honestly could have gone either way, but that was a fight she should have won decisively. And then Milena Dudeva, she actually lost a round in that fight before Dudeva just completely gassed out and Renaud was able to just take over. So I think her performances have actually gotten a little bit worse. And you got to remember, she's 39 years old now. So it's not going to get any easier. And I don't expect her to actually get better as she performs in the UFC. Vetch Kohei, on the other hand, while she did start her UFC career on a nice winning streak, and yeah, she didn't earn that, really, that title shot against Ronda Rousey, but she's actually looked a lot better lately. I mean, it was not a great fight against Jessica Ai, but she deserved to win it. She did enough. And she had a very close fight against Raquel Pennington that honestly could have gone either way. And Pennington's one of the top contenders at the moment. So I think Vetch Kohei is right there. And as long as this fight stays standing, Kohei should be in a decent position. She's not exactly a huge puncher, but she could be active enough that she could win this fight. I mean, in terms of overall fight activity, Kohea lands almost 2-1 striking volume against Marion Renault. And then realistically, the best chance that Renault has of winning the fight is if she can get it to the floor, because she comes from a grappling background and she has a very excellent jiu-jitsu. So if she can get Kohea on the ground at somewhere, there's a decent chance she could submit her. But I think she's playing with fire a little bit if she stays standing. I mean, Renault, she really hasn't showcased any major flaws on the feet, but I do think that she can be outworked by somebody that knows what they're doing on the feet. And while Vetch Kohea is not like a striking master, I think she could be active enough to fluster Renault a little bit. Because Renault likes to keep her distance a little bit, work her kicks, and then she'll close with combinations when she settles in. And I don't know if Kohea is going to let her settle in. Plus, with this being in Brazil, I think that it could be to Kohea's benefit. So I'm actually leaning Vetch Kohea. I think that she can pull out a decision here. Now, dropping all the way down to the flyweight division, we have Jussier Formiga, who is 19-4, taking on Ray Borg, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Awesome fight. I opened Formiga -130, the comeback on Borg at -110. So virtually pick them with a very slight lean towards Formiga. And right now it's -130 for Formiga. Borg is at +110. So basically staying the same. Line margins have tightened up a little bit. And man, what a fight. I mean, you have two of the best grapplers at 125 pounds kind of going at it here. So we're going to see some pretty neat exchanges, I think, obviously on the ground if it gets there, which it should, because both guys are probably going to try to do so. And of course, we all know Formiga loves to hang on people's backs and whatnot too. And that's going to be a big part of this. I mean, if Formiga can stick to what he does best and kind of get on Borg's back and kind of out grapple him a little bit by hanging on and just controlling the grappling department. Obviously, he has an edge to win this fight. I think a lot of people are going to look back at the Scoggins fight against Borg and think that Borg, that's exactly how you beat Borg, is kind of control him. But I really think that Scoggins is the better wrestler. Formiga is not going to be able to control Borg on the ground like that, like Scoggins did. Now, of course, Formiga is a very slick jiu-jitsu artist. I mean, world class, and he can definitely have success on the ground against Borg. I'm not saying that, but I just think it's going to be a little bit of a different style matchup for Borg out there for the people that are going to compare the two. Now, that being said, on the feet, it's going to get interesting. I mean, Formiga, definitely his hands are okay, but I think Borg is probably the more a diverse striker. I think he's going to mix things up with his kicking game enough, and of course, he's got a little bit of speed and power to go along with it as well. So I think on the feet, Borg, I actually give the slight edge there. I think Formiga will be game enough, and he'll make it close. But on the ground, it's going to be interesting. It's going to probably come down to who gets top position and who can, you know, like I said, control more of the grappling exchanges. And I think it's basically a toss-up. It's going to be interesting. In fact, I lean a little bit more towards Borg, to be honest with you, in that aspect of the game. I mean, I think that, again, the setback that he's had in his career so far was against Scoggins. Scoggins is a huge guy at 125 pounds, and he's got underrated wrestling to go along with it. So I don't think Formiga is going to present those type of problems, and I think Borg's going to be able to scramble and not let Formiga get his back enough times that I think Borg's going to end up finding himself in better positions And I think he's going to be able to, again, outscore for me on the feet as well. So I think if it hits the scorecards, which it should, I think Borg is going to kind of edge it out there. Now, again, hostile territory for me is in Brazil. Borg, I mean, if you look at, you know, do some MMA math, it might not make sense to pick Borg in this spot. But that being said, I think stylistically how they match up together, Borg is going to be a handful for Formiga as well. So I'm going to lean that way. I'm going to go against the grain a little bit here, and I'm going to pick Borg to win this fight.
Juicier Formiga has been on a bit of a nice run. I mean, for the most part, he's going out there and taking care of business against the guys he's supposed to beat. He looked great against Dustin Ortiz. Obviously, he loses the fights like against John Dodson, Joseph Benavidez, Henry Cejudo, basically the three guys ranked ahead of him right now. But for the most part, he goes out there and takes care of business against fighters. I mean, good performances against Zach Makovsky, Wilson Hayes, Dustin Ortiz, even Chris Carriasso, Scott Jorgensen. I mean, those are all quality wins. He hasn't exactly gone out there and dominated people like I thought that he might be able to when, you know, he was super hyped up as the number one flyweight in the world before the UFC ever made the flyweight division. But Formiga has developed. I mean, his striking game has improved quite a bit, and he's going out there. I mean, against Hayes, he actually outstruck Hayes and was able to hurt Hayes on the feet a little bit. So in this fight, Formiga, I think, is going to have a little bit better overall submission skills, again, compared to Ray Borg. And he probably is still a little bit better on the feet than Borg, although chin strength, I'd have to favor Borg. We really haven't seen Borg hurt in a fight, even though he's lost and he's had fights where he lost decisively. He hasn't really been hurt in a fight. So I think if these guys are trading on the feet, Formiga should get the better of it. But if they both land a big shot, Formiga might be the one that goes down. That being said, I think this fight is going to have – it's all going to hinge on the ground control, who gets top position, who can stay in dominant positions. I mean, Ray Borg is a guy that wants to get on top and just start pounding you into submission. You saw that in the last fight against Smolka. I mean, he looked unbelievable. That was the best I think Ray Borg has ever looked inside the octagon, and I think it had a lot to do with the move to Greg Jackson's. They're kind of refining him, and he's still so young overall as a fighter. I mean, he's still only 23 years old, so he has a long ways to go in his development, and he could still become an elite UFC fighter. So it's tough to just judge him based on all of his past performances, because you know that he's getting so much better every time we see him. And that's what I thought. That's what I messed up going into the last fight. I thought, you know, Luis Smolka, maybe before his last training camp, Smolka might have been better than Borg. But after the last training camp, Smolka was not even close to Borg's level. I mean, that was extremely one-sided. So this time around, I think Formiga, even though heading into this fight, Formiga is the more talented fighter, but who knows what Ray Borg's been working on? It's just so tough to think about all the little intricacies that he's refining and developing, and he might be on Formiga's level in terms of grappling and control. I know he's better than Formiga with ground and pound, and he might be on Formiga's level with scrambling, with submission attempts. Formiga's amazing at taking people's backs, but is Ray Borg really going to give up his back to somebody? Like, he is a, like, that's basically his base is the ground. So I think this is going to be a fascinating battle. And Ray Borg might have developed his stand up enough that he can beat Formiga there as well. I mean, this kid is just so loaded with potential. The one thing that's going against Borg is, I mean, this guy has had so many issues with making weight. I mean, he is still growing into his frame, and it's getting harder and harder for him to make the flyweight limit every time that we see him. So I would not be shocked that this fight might be the last time we ever even see him in the flyweight division. I mean, he missed weight pretty badly the last time out, and Smolka accepted the fight anyway. So that's one thing to definitely keep an eye on. Is Ray Borg going to make the 126-pound limit? And if he does, then I think that he actually has a great chance of performing. Even if he doesn't, he probably will look fine. But I hope that they don't let him keep fighting at flyweight, because he's just so physical and still, I mean, 23 years old, you might still, you know, add a little bit more man strength over the years and fill out a little bit more. So I'm leaning Ray Borg just based on all the unknown factors of his development, but I mean, Formiga could definitely surprise me as well. I mean, he's definitely talented enough to beat Rayborg at Rayborg's current skill level, but I just don't know how long Rayborg stays at those skill levels. I mean, this is a guy that is almost growing exponentially out there. So I'm leaning Rayborg. I think he pulls off the victory here, but I'm not insanely confident about it because there's so much that we don't know about this fight. Now, moving up to the lightweight division, we have Edson Barbosa, who is 18-4, taking on Benil Dariush, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Barbosa minus 180, the comeback on Dariush at plus 140. Right now, looking over five times, it's Barbosa minus 170, Dariush plus 150. There has been two-way action on this fight for a while now. It's actually been out there, so it has been bet up and down a little bit, and it's settled basically to where I opened it. Line margins have tightened up a little bit. Right now, it's a 20-cent line setting. So minus 170, plus 150. This is a head-scratcher, too. A great matchup. I mean, you have two of the best lightweights in the world going at it right here. And obviously, Barbosa is one of the best strikers in the sport. I mean, period. And in my opinion, if his chin, if you could trust his chin a little bit more, the guy could be wearing that lightweight strap. That's how good this guy is. I mean, as far as his takedown defense is up to par. I mean, you can't get this guy to the ground and control him. I mean, it hasn't happened yet. So even if you do get a brief takedown, he bounces back up quickly. And again, most of the time he's able to keep the fight upright. You don't even get that chance to get him briefly on the ground. So Barbosa's takedown defense is superb, and his striking is obviously elite, to say the least. He's got power. He mixes things up well. It's one of the nastiest kickers in the game, whether it's low kicks, high kicks, mid kicks, anything. Barbosa is just nasty. It's just the problem is with him, that chin has been a little bit suspect, even though he's looked good recently, especially that chin hasn't been much of an issue for him as of late, but it's always in the back of your mind. You always have to be a little bit cautious. I mean, we could easily see Barbosa, I mean, in the past, it's happened to him against fighters like Cerrone and of that nature, that he gets rocked and then possibly submitted along the way after he does get rocked or whatever, Ferguson, and that type of situation as well. So, I mean, that's the flaw in the kryptonite you have to worry about with Barbosa. And Dariush, I mean, he can probably do a lot of those things. His striking is underrated, and I've been nothing but impressed with Dariush's improvements overall. In fact, that setback that he had not long ago against Chiesa is really a shame, because if he didn't have that setback, he was winning that first round, obviously. He was winning the early part of that fight, and then Chiesa was able to take his back and does what he does best and choke him out in the second round. But outside of that, I mean, Dariush has been on a heck of a streak. I mean, impressive over Vic, impressive over Magomedov. I mean, that fight definitely was a thing, a piece of art, really, because for a great victory for Dariush on his resume. I mean, Magomedov was a very highly touted, well-respected prospect coming up, a great striker in his own right, and Dariush was able to get that win as well. So Dariush is right there. I mean, he's at the top of the game, high level, even with his striking game. I mean, he's more of a jiu-jitsu based fighter, more of a grappling based fighter, a pretty good wrestler. He's able to get the fights down more times than not, but on the feet, he's nothing to laugh about. So I've been going kind of back and forth on this fight, honestly. I mean, just common sense says Barbosa should be able to sprawl and brawl, keep this upright, and he is the better striker of the two, but I think Dariush can actually strike with him on the feet to the point where Barbosa's going to have to be careful. I don't think there's going to be a lot of mistakes to be made here. Because if he does, obviously Dariush can land that punch, maybe wobble him, and then again, submit him quickly. Or we're not going to really tell until they get in there. I mean, can Dariush match up well enough to get the catch a kick or something of that nature and get the fight to the ground and give Barbosa trouble on the ground? I mean, possibly. He definitely has the tools to possibly do something like that as well. So the more I think about it and the more times I go through this fight, the more I like Dariush, honestly. I think his skill set is a pretty good matchup for Barbosa. And I think if it hits the scorecards, we're going to see a very competitive decision. And I think if it doesn't, I think Dariush can obviously catch Barbosa along the way and possibly finish him. Now, of course, you can easily say that about Barbosa as well. Dariush has been knocked out. His chin could be a little bit suspect as well, and Barbosa is one of the most dangerous and best strikers, like I said, in the game right now. So yes, we could see this fight ending either way, I think, inside the distance, and we could see this being a very competitive fight on the scorecards. But with all that being said, I like Dariush, honestly. I think that, again, this is a good spot for him to pick up a very solid win over one of the best lightweights in the world in Barbosa. So I'll go against the grain and kind of pick Dariush here.
Benil Dariush and Edson Barbosa have very clear paths to victories. I mean, if Edson Barbosa can just keep Dariush away from him, then he's going to be able to jab him and kick him to death. I mean, Barbosa has mastered range fighting technique. I mean, he is clearly one of the best pure technical strikers in the entire UFC, but he has his flaws. Obviously, Barbosa's chin is not very good, and Dariush has some excellent power. I mean, this guy has really developed his stand-up, and he's become a serious threat on the feet. Now, he's not Edson Barbosa's level, but you don't have to be as good of a striker as Edson Barbosa to beat him. You just have to connect. I mean, look at Danny Castillo, who almost knocked Barbosa's lights out, or you look at other performances like Jamie Varner were able to connect with Barbosa and put him out. Donald Cerrone was a very good striker, but I mean, it was just a jab and he had him on Queer Street. So you don't have to be an amazing striker to put Barbosa's lights out or get him in a position where he's extremely vulnerable. I mean, all it takes is one good shot from Dariush and Barbosa is going to be in big trouble because, I mean, if he starts getting wobbly legs, it'll open up the takedown. It'll open up opportunities for submissions. And there's hardly anybody in the lightweight division that's as good at submissions as Beneil Dariush. I mean, this guy is world-class grappler. So, clearly, if Dariush wants to win this fight, he either needs to close the distance right away, get a takedown, get Barbosa on his back, and then work for something there, or just play with fire a little bit because his stand-up is pretty good. We haven't really seen any issues with his chin, so he can afford to take some damage and see if he can find that one spot, that one opening to land something and hurt Barbosa and set up a finish there. So both guys have very clear paths to victory, but to me, Edson Barbosa's fighting at about the best level he's ever fought in his entire career. I mean, his last two performances against Anthony Pettis and Gilbert Melendez were just a step above what we've ever seen. I mean, this guy is getting so good at hitting and not getting hit back and just keeping that constant pressure of long range strikes in your opponent's face and not giving them the openings. I think Edson Barbosa might be able to pull this off. It's just all about, will he get hit? And if he does get hit, he's going to be in trouble, but I think he might be able to keep Dariush at bay. We've seen Dariush struggle a little bit against really good strikers like Michael Johnson. So I think there is a definite possibility for Edson Barbosa to not just win, but maybe even finish Dariush. But I think that as long as he can keep him at distance, this is definitely Edson Barbosa's fight to win. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the light heavyweight division, we have Mauricio Shogun Hua, who is 24-10, taking on John Volante, who is 15-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Crazy fights for a lot of reasons, obviously, that you guys know of. Right now, Shogun Hua, minus 175, the comeback on Volante, or I shouldn't say right now, that was my opener, minus 175 for Shogun. Comeback on Volante at plus 135. Right now, it is minus 140 for Hua. The comeback on Volante is at plus 120. So Shogun still favored, but action did come in a little bit. The line dropped from plus 135, now it's plus 120. A little bit more support coming in Volante's way. I do get it. Volante is a very talented fighter. I mean, he's got good hands. He's got good power on the feet. He's got good wrestling. It's hard to take the guy to the ground and do much with him there either. So the fight typically stays upright with Volante, and it becomes a striking battle, and it becomes a war in a lot of oftentimes. So Volante is more than capable of landing his shot and putting fighters out. And with the Shogun Hua at the age of 35 that's been in the wars that he's been in, it wouldn't be out of the question at all for Volante to land that bomb and put Shogun out. So I mean, that's the factor everybody, I think, is coming in on Volante. They think that he could very well be a live dog, and I wouldn't be shocked if he does knock Shogun out. But if you look at it a little bit closer, I mean, Shogun does still have enough left in the tank, in my opinion, that he can have some success in this fight. I mean, Volante does tend to fade as the fight goes on. He's got some suspect – I mean, his chin is suspect, to say the least, at times as well. His defense at times gets bad, even though I've seen some improvements in his defense, even his fight against Safarov. Volante, early on in that fight, I was impressed with his defense. He tightened things up. He wasn't as hittable. But then after Safarov did land a shot, I mean, that kind of went away and it became a sloppy war. That wasn't, I mean, it was a fun fight. Don't get me wrong. But that being said, it just, Volante wasn't fighting as smart as he could have been after that. So he does make some errors at times in that kind of situation, loves to get in those firefights and those wars. And Shogun's been in so many of those in his career as well that, I mean, he's game. He's down for that sort of thing as well. But not just that. I think if it comes down to heart, to toughness, to the will to win a fight, and who's going to be there at the end of round three still trying to win the fight. I got to lean a little bit more towards Shogun, to be honest with you. I mean, he still has enough left in the tank. I mean, his win over Anderson was not bad. I think Shogun, he's still at that level where all the guys around that level, including Vellante, he can still pick off a lot of them. I think he's just not going to pick off the champion level guys right now at light heavyweight. That's it. So he's going to be in that kind of second tier of fighters, but in that second tier, he could still be a lot of people. But again, you got to just be cautious. He's got a nose broken, shattered several times. Obviously, he can get knocked out. He's not getting any younger. So it's definitely a risk backing Shogun these days for sure. But as far as a pick goes, I mean, Shogun is the better fighter of the two. I think Shogun, if he doesn't get knocked out, he probably wins a fight, probably stops Vellante along the way. If it does happen to hit the scorecards, which I don't have the confidence that it does, I think Shogun wins on the cards if it does as well. So even though Vellante has a path to victory with his knockout power, I still think that Shogun's the better fighter, and I still think that he's probably going to win this fight. So I'm going to pick him to win.
Man, there's so many things that could happen in this fight. I mean, Mauricio Shogun Hua is, I mean, it seems like he would be completely shot as a fighter, and that anybody that's half decent in the light heavyweight division should be able to take him out at this point. But, Hua keeps finding ways to win. Shogun survived getting hurt badly against Nogueira and ended up winning a decision, and then say what you want about the last performance, but he showed a lot of guts in there and came on strong late against Corey Anderson and was able to win a decision there as well. So I wouldn't really call it a resurgence, more veteran craftiness. And John Vellante, I mean, this guy, when he's on, he is so dangerous. I mean, he's a strong starter. He has just devastating power in his hands. He has nasty kicks. I mean, this guy can really do some damage, and he's physically, he can wrestle people, he can get them on the ground and do damage there. He can control people in the clinch, but he has so many flaws and inconsistencies with his game. I mean, the guy, his chin is not very good overall. He runs out of steam in fights and then loses late or after the first round often, and there's just a little bit of, I don't know, maybe quit in him. And it's tough to expect a lot out of this guy. Yeah, he could go out there and absolutely steamroll Shogun, and I would not be shocked one bit, but I would also not be shocked if he maybe started strong in the first couple minutes and then Shogun cracked him and then he never really recovered. And then Shogun finishes him or Shogun wins a decision. So, I mean, just look at Vellante's last fight. I mean, he went in there against somebody that was not even close to his level in Saparbek Safarov. And, I mean, this fight had no business even getting out of the first round, probably, with how gassed Safarov was. And Safarov almost knocked Vellante out in the first round and the second round. The second round was more damning because, I mean, Safarov could barely even lift his hands because he was so gassed. And Vellante almost got knocked out anyway. I mean, if somebody that knows what they're doing with the incredible credentials that Shogun possesses, I have to side with Shogun. I think that, yeah, Vellante is going to be dangerous and there's a chance that Vellante can finish him. But man, if Shogun just connects even a little bit, then, I mean, this fight could be over in an instant. So I'm going to side with Shogun. I think that he pulls this one out and actually gets on a 3-fight win streak. So my pick is Shogun, probably by knockout. Now, moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a middleweight contest between Vitor Belfort, who is 25-12, taking on Kelvin Gastelum, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Gastelum -315, the comeback on Belfort at +235. Wasn't quite enough. Right now it's Gastelum -425. Belfort is at +340. Needless to say, it's kind of a difficult line. I mean, you have Gastelum coming in at middleweight in his second fight at middleweight right now, as of late, I should say. I mean, obviously coming off of an impressive win over Kennedy in his last fight. And then Belfort, the aging veteran that's still dangerous. I mean, it's definitely a tough matchup because we're used to seeing Gastelum fight at 170 pounds. And now he's fighting with the big boys. Obviously, he did well against a guy like Tim Kennedy, which is impressive because Kennedy is definitely not an easy out. So I think that, I mean, the line is kind of justified. The action early on is probably justified as well, because what it comes down to is every one of Belfort's fights. I mean, he's going to be dangerous early on, especially on the feet. He obviously has enough knockout power to make life interesting for whoever he fights and knock opponents out there. But can he keep the fight off the ground, and can he go deep into the fight without just kind of finding a way to get out of there? So Gaslam is pretty smart. I think he knows that he has to get the takedowns along the way. I think he's just a very well-prepared fighter in a lot of ways, minus his weight cutting, unfortunately for him, at 170 pounds, obviously. But other than that, I think he's going to probably be able to weather the early storm if there is one from Belfort early on, get the fight to the ground and do what most people are able to do with him. I mean, he has the skill set to do so. Gaslam's striking is even looking better. He's just improving. I mean, he's really becoming a very well-rounded fighter in all aspects of the game. And even at 185, I mean, it doesn't seem to be a bad fit for him there as well. So this is a good matchup. The UFC's kind of throwing him a bone here, even though Belfort is going to be in Brazil. He's going to be hyped. He's going to have the crowd behind him, and he is going to be a dangerous opponent. I think it's still a test that Gaslam could pass. And I mean, obviously that's why you're seeing him open as a high favorite and continue to even become a bigger favorite as the fight goes on. Gaslam really should win this fight. So I'm going to pick him to win, and I won't say much about it. I think he does get the job done here.
Yeah. If this fight goes the way I think it goes, it could be over very quickly. I mean, yeah, Vitor Belfort has picked up some amazing wins in his career. And I mean, the guy, when he was on at TRT, I mean, he smoked Michael Bisping and Luke Rockhold and Dan Henderson. I mean, he was a world beater, but that was a while ago. I mean, the Vitor Belfort we know now is a guy that goes out there, looks tough, looks scary, looks mean, and then he gets absolutely destroyed. I mean, that's what's happened in three of his last four fights. I mean, against Chris Weidman, he started strong, and then just the second he got put on his back, he got the crap kicked out of him, and then he got finished. And then, yeah, he picks up a win over Dan Henderson, but then faces Jacare, gets absolutely smoked in the first round, faces Musasi, gets absolutely destroyed in the first round, or in the second round, just hardly does anything in any of those fights. So I know that those are all elite competition, but man, I mean, Kelvin Gastelum might be elite competition at this point. I mean, he looked so good in his return to middleweight, where he got that third round finish over Tim Kennedy, forced Kennedy into retirement. That was unbelievable performance. I mean, the guy, even though he's undersized in the middleweight division, he is still so strong, and he is just able to back up everything with volume, with his pace, with his aggression. There aren't a lot of guys that can keep up with him. And I just don't think that Vitor Belfort is an elite fighter anymore. I mean, especially with the way that not only is he losing, but he is losing decisively. I honestly expect that this is the last time we see Vitor in the cage. I think that Kelvin Gastelum retires him. So I there's not much more to say about this. Vitor is an extremely talented striker, and I mean, he can throw combinations and has the hand speed that is elite, but man, we haven't seen it. And I just don't know if he can even tap into that anymore. I mean, at this point, without the aid of some drugs, Vitor Belfort at age 39 just doesn't have it anymore. And I expect Kelvin Gastelum to not just win, but to take him out pretty quickly. So I think this is an extreme mismatch. So my pick is going to be Kelvin Gastelum. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 106. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Saturday. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at @MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.